Okay, so everyone made their way through Daf Beis to Daf Vav. How many other Shirim in the Yeshiva cover like five lot?
First piece.
Yeah. Okay. But,
yeah. Everyone by the
top. Right now, we're outside of that. So the main question that we're gonna have to analyze in the next tabura, is what's the relationship between the specific avos nezikin and the general mechayiv of nezikin? And just to put it in more concrete terms, you could have two conceptions of nezikin. We'll see that it gets more fine-grained as we go forward. But you could have an atomistic conception, like that the world of nezikin is made of these little atoms, and those atoms are the avos. And there really is no category of nezikin independent of the specific avos that constitute it. So when you talk about nezikin, you're talking about the disjunction of shor, bor, esh, adam, etc. And those categories exhaust the spectrum of nezek. Or you could say that when the Mishnah talks about these avos nezikin, that's really an instrument or just a device to establish that there is a broad category of nezikin. And once the Torah gives you a hint by specifying these categories, you infer the general category and the general mechayev that exists independent of these constituents. That's going to be the general question that we're going to analyze in this Kabura and next Kabura, and you already saw the Brisker Rav who takes a clear stand on it. With respect to our Gemara, I just want to point out that there are at least three discussions, or I would say four discussions in our Gemara that seem to indicate one position or the other on this question. So the first is the Avos and Toldos question. That's why the sugya and Daf Beis through Daf Gimel. The Gemara assumes that there's an Av, and the category of the Av generates a Tolda. That seems to imply that there's something significant about the category on its own. So it depends how you understand the concept of Tolda. The second thing that comes up in the Gemara that implies... I think that implies the constituent side. That like there's some internal significance to the Av itself, and that's why we care about like what's derived from these Avos.
Does the second side of like a broad nezikin really rule out the possibility that there's significance?
It certainly doesn't rule out the possibility, but the more you think that the classifications are really important, the more you emphasize the atomistic conception. You see that clearly from the Brisker Rav, right? Because his point is, the more you emphasize a general mechayiv, the more you're inclined to think that the toldos don't have the attributes of the av. Right? The presumption is that whatever is unique about these categories is going to be very limited, unless you have proof to extend it. Okay? So just the general avos and toldos distinction, then the attempt to classify the avos and toldos. The second thing that seems to suggest this in our discussion in the Gemara.
What if it's really like the opposite though? And then if you have a concept of an av and a tolda, like the Gemara is basically not too going into the question. So then if you assume that you care about specifics, then obviously the av and a tolda should be more similar to each other. The fact that the Gemara has to go all the way to try to prove it, relationship to the avos and tolda, but then more general.
So I think it's a different issue, like how the Gemara goes about establishing it. I think that's a step. Let's keep that apart from the general question of whether the Gemara is interested in the classification scheme.
Right, I'm saying it should be
the other. No, you're saying the way the Gemara goes about doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the very fact that having this discussion implies that it assumes.
It's possible. Let me think about that. Let me think about that further. The second thing in our Gemara that seems to suggest this is the dispute about the number of avos nezikin. For some reason, it sounds like it's important, if that indeed is the Gemara's maskana that it's important, that we have the list of the exhaustive categories of the avos nezikin.
I mean, you could also put it in
the
direction, the fact that there's so much machlokas about it and there's such a wide range of options, so
yeah. Right. You might say that the Gemara's conclusion when it says, oh, Bezelo Kamari, that the list is insignificant. Right. But to the extent that the Gemara is interested in trying to hammer out a list, right? And I'm saying in a similar way to the first one, to the extent that the Gemara is really interested in tracing Avos and Toldos, like lineages of Nezikin, and which category a particular Nezek falls under, you see the categories departing.
Yeah.
Same with the classification list. To the extent that the classification is taken seriously, you see that the Gemara thinks it's an important enterprise. Obviously, the third thing that takes us—that's the Gemara on Daf Dalet to Daf Hey, and on Daf Hey and Beis, we have the third thing that seems to suggest this. This is arguably the most compelling indication. The Gemara on Hey and Beis talks about lehilchoseihem, how each category of the Avos has its specific Keturim. That's this Gemara that I quote over here in Hey and Beis. The Gemara says, on the assumption that you can derive several of the categories from a binyan of two of the categories. So why does the Torah go out of its way to establish the different avos? So Gemara says, for their divergent dinim. And this Gemara is very important. He knows that Chris Barab, when he talks about the lehilchoseihem, he's really alluding to this Gemara. And what are the lehilchoseihem? So Gemara says, Kerem has a distinction between Tam and Luad. Shane and Regel are exempt in Rosh Hashanah. Bor has an exemption for Kalim, also an exemption for Adam, depending on your Shita. Adam has a special halacha arba of Kamish and Barim. And Ish has a tour of either of Kamun, or it has a special chiyuv of Nero and Avana, scorching the stones. What?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
So you see, like, the Hilchoseihem really establishes that the categories are important in that they have divergent halachos, divergent theme. Finally, the fourth thing in our Gemara, in the Shakavataria, this already brings us to Daf Vav Amud Aleph, Daf Vav Amud Beis, is that Tzad HaShavah Shavah. The Gemara assumes that we can derive new categories of Nezikin from combining the paradigm of two prior Nezikin. So you combine Shor and Ish, and you could derive a new category. Now we'll see, that's as with the earlier examples, depending on how you interpret the significance of that project, it may be a riot that the categories are not significant. But to the extent that the Gemara thinks that new categories have to be derived from previously existing categories, the implication is that, like, the categories are determinative. Right, it's the categories that establish the mechayiv, not the general principle of darkan, lahazik, etc. Right. Now you might say again, the maskana, once the Gemara is willing to derive new categories from previously existing ones, that shows that the categories are fluid, they're more flexible. But to the extent that they have to be derived from those categories, the implication is that the categories are controlling. Okay, so that's just an overview of how this question. Is really an overarching theme in the first five blot of the Gemara. Okay. I told you we wouldn't spend too much time on the Shakavataria. We wouldn't get bogged down. Okay. So the question now is going to be, so what is the relationship between the specific avos and the general chayiv of Nezikin? Yeah, no.
I was going to say maybe just quickly just repeat, but it's a different side of for the people that just can't share.
For Ben? Okay. And Avram? Oh, yeah. So the two sides are, look at our Mishnah. You can even see the Mishnah in that base of Aleph, also a very nice instruction. The Mishnah starts off with Arba Avos Nezikin, and it concludes with just a general Tzara Shabbat Shebehen, Shetarkan Mahazik Kushmirasan Alecha, right? So the question is Nezikin, do we understand Nezikin atomistically? That the category of Nezikin is really just exhausted by the specific categories of Avos. And so what it means to be a Mazik is to be a member of one of these categories of an Av Nezek. Or do we say that these Avos Nezikin are just a heuristic? They're really just a device to teach us that there's a general Mechayiv that exists independent of the Dalet Avos Nezikin. That's the general from here. Is that clear, Ben? Yeah. Avram, is that clear? What's your intuition on this question?
Try both.
What?
Try both.
that your intuition is like to compromise?
No, I think it makes more sense.
But there are aspects of both of these?
Yeah, definitely. Well, by individuals and the general compromise.
So this would be like some combination of balancing the location of the arbavos with like the specific kind of arbavos. No?
I think that also when it comes to the different types of avonizikin, the list of avonizikin, the question about whether or not the individual habit itself is categorically significant.
That's a really good point. Noah's pointing out that the different lists may take different stands on these questions. So maybe like our Mishnah thinks that there's like ontological significance to the different categories, whereas Rav Priya and Rav Oshia just think that this is like a pedagogical tool to remind people about, you know, what things are wrong to do. Right, but they don't represent substantive categories. I think that's a good point. I think one thing that even undermines the... So, Isaac, do you have a stand on this question? Leah, do you have a strong view on this?
I think Noah's point. It does seem a lot like the Mishnah and the Arba levels are much more significant for Rav Oshia's
levels. Yeah, I would push back on that by saying that even our Mishnah, the fact that the Mishnah talks about four categories but clearly implies like five, or that its categories don't actually correspond to the Arba levels per deacon, implies that the levels can't be so important, right? I mean, so look, we know that there are at least five levels. Right? There's Shor, Bor, Shane, Regel, and Karen. So the fact that there are at least five distinct categories and the Mishnah speaks about four already implies that there's something fungible about the categories. Right, so my focus,
isn't
well?
Isn't Shor Karen?
It's at least Karen, but it's maybe also Regel. Well? Right, now, so according to Rav, it's Kol Mila. If Mave is Adam, then Shor is all three, Kol Mila de Shor, Shane, Rego, and Karen. If Mave is Shane, then Shor is both Karen and Rego. I think that significantly undermines the extent to which these categories are perfectly rigid. Avram, do you have a strong view on this?
I like that part about the Mishnah, the fact that it doesn't.
Yeah, the categories themselves.
But anyway, at the same time, if we're broadly speaking grouping them, let's say for Kol Mili Dishor, so then the next three are directly corresponding, and then the first one is just saying how like this one right. Category maybe is.
Yeah, so maybe according to Rav, the categories are preserved.
Right.
But according to Shmuel, that we're splitting up Shor, then the categories become imperfect. Yeah, I mean, look. According to Shmuel. That Mave refers to Shane. Is everybody in Machlokes, Rav, and Shmuel about what Mave refers to? Yeah, Machlokes, according to Rav, Mave in the Mishnah refers to Adam, according to Shmuel, it refers to Shane. According to Shmuel, so Adam Amazik is not one of the Avos Nezikin. So clearly, when the Mishnah talks about Avos Nezikin, it's Lav Dafka. Right, so you can't talk about these categories as the categories of Nezek. Because there's a whole section of Nezikin which is missing from our Mishnah.
But these are the categories of Nezikin moment.
What?
These are the categories of Nezikin moment.
You have to say something like that. I mean, but the Mishnah doesn't. You're saying the implication is that it's just Nezikin moment. You have to say something like that.
That's a Gemara.
Well?
The Gemara is saying
Nezikin moment. The Gemara is saying Nezikin moment. The Gemara is true. But it certainly it limits the scope of the initial discussion. Well? Yeah, certainly Rav interpreted Adam as being part of the Mishnah. Right? So you don't get the impression that's Mahogas Rav and Shmuel that the Mishnah is only this game Mamman or all Milibin Zikin. But the point is that it limits Isaac's once you grant Isaac's point, it still limits the scope of our analysis. Because even if our Mishnah is just Niske Mamon, it means that the categories of Niske Mamon are comprised of distinct Avos Nezikin, but not the whole category of Nezik, not the whole range of Nezikin itself. Right? You guys want to say something? Okay, so let's get into it.
This is like an organizational point, though, like how the Mishnah structure itself is not necessarily reflective of whether Ezekiel is atomistic or like it was brought in as like the hazard of the temple.
This is true, but given that, like the so it's not just the categories of Ezekiel like derive from this Mishnah. So I don't think it's fair to say, oh, the Mishnah is just like the text that introduces it, but like the categories really have significance independent of the way that the Mishnah presents them. I think to the extent that we think the categories that are significant, it's like derived from the way the Mishnah organizes them. That's what. Not that they owe their significance to the Mishnah, but like one of the reasons for taking the categories as distinct entities is because the Mishnah introduces them this way. That's my impression. So, okay.
Noah? Just like another thought, and maybe we'll get to it later. But the halacha motion we've seen, I have states. I'm not exactly sure how that would play into this discussion, but it also makes it seem like there has to be some major exception to this because there are defined categories.
But it's a tolda. It is a tolda. Yeah. It's like a rule-breaking tolda, so we'll have to figure what that is. So let's jump into the particulars here. So this entire discussion, the abstract discussion about the nature of the avos and the relationship to the broad category of the vegan, really depends on how we make sense of the specific avos. So what I want to spend most of our time on today is analyzing the specific avos and their unique characteristics. So let's begin, and obviously our question is going to be, to what extent do the exceptional traits of each av, to what extent do they reflect some flaw in the mechayiv of the zikin? At the reason why, let's say, Shane is pater versus a rabbin reflects something about the mechayiv of Shane? Or do the special halachos and exemptions of the avos, do they merely reflect like independent considerations and defenses, meaning unrelated to the mechayiv and that's it? This is critical for understanding the Briskerov's argument. But the Briskerov's argument is that there's one general mechayiv of nezikin. The special pturim of lehilchoseim of each av is really independent of the general mechayiv. So bor is pater mikalim, not because some flaw in the mechayiv of bor, but because of some chiddush haTorah that it gives you an exemption, even though in principle the mechayiv should hold you liable for kalim. Why is that? Is that consistent with your understanding of the Briskerov? That's like Briskerov wants to argue there's a general mechayiv of nezikin. The shemos, the pturim of each particular av is somehow like a special chiddush haTorah unrelated to the mechayiv. So let's look at the avos, and part of what we want to keep our eyes open for is whether the special rules reflect something about the mechayiv or if they don't. So let's begin with the hakdara of keren and its characterization. So what defines something as a keren? Let me make one further point. The most important nafkamina between the two fundamental views, the two different ways of looking at the mechayiv and tikkun, whether it's atomistic or one general mechayiv, is whether we have there's a presumption that there is a chiyuv for every kind of nezek. Well, see, the Chazon Ish thinks that if you can't trace a damage, if you can't trace a particular tort, a particular damage to the Arba Avos Nezikin, there's no basis for holding somebody liable. Chazon Ish makes this point with respect to Avdo Vahamasa. He says that the Dalet Avos Nezikin refer to Nizke Mamon. They refer to inanimate objects, or they refer to non-rational beings. Shor, Bor, Ish. There's no paradigm in the Mishnah to hold somebody liable for Nizke Mamon of a rational being. So since the paradigm is lacking, clearly you can't hold somebody liable for the Nezek committed by their Eved Aram.
Doesn't that go against the
implication
of the Gemara?
What?
Doesn't that go against the implication
of the Gemara? So he does away. He says the Gemara is Divrei Guzma. He says when the Gemara says it's because the Eved could seek retribution, seek vengeance, he says that's the Gemara's way of saying that he's a rational being. We'll talk about this Chazanish in the next couple of rows. Whereas if you hold like the Brisker Rav, depending how you read the Lavush, exactly. The Chazanish says it explicitly. That we're going to discuss next couple of rows. If you hold like the Brisker Rav, of course there's a general Mechayev of Nezikin that should presumptively apply to any damage. The only question is to have special exemptions of the Lihil Chosea. But of course there should be a chiyuv. So that's just a very clear way where the two camps diverge. To reinforce that, there is a machlokas mishonim whether there's a chiyuv d'oraisa, we saw this already, whether there's a chiyuv d'oraisa for avdo v'amaso, just as a p'tur drabanan in order to protect the slave owners, that's Meiri's view, or whether you take the Levush's view that midoraisa you're pater because you can't exercise shmira. That fits very nicely with the two schools of the chaznish against the Israel. Okay, so what are the unique traits of karet? What? Yeah, so one thing the Gemara says is Kavanas Alahazik. That's explicit on that base. What else would the Gemara say about it? So that's not unique to, that's unique, that's general for all the categories. So Ein Hezeko Matsui. The Gemara says it's on that base in contrasting Keren with Regel. Regel is Hezeko Matsui, it's frequent, it's common. Keren is uncommon. The Gemara also has another point where it says there can't be hana to the mazik, as the Gemara says in contrasting it with shame.
It's not just important.
Well,
it is important. I mean, it's important that it's in contrast to.
That's exactly the question.
Right?
So do all these conditions have to be satisfied in order to make something karen? So does that have to satisfy kavanas lahazik in hazika matzui and in hana lahaziko? Or is it sufficient that it has like one or two of these characteristics? Right. So this is really seems to be a point of contention amongst Rishonim. Right. Chananel you can see explicitly says kol davar shekavanas avehim alahazik ve'ein haziko matzvei. That's going to fall under karen. So it sounds like you have to satisfy both intent. The animal has to have mal intent, and it has to be rare. Right. It's like an uncommon form of. Rashi, for example, this Rashi is not a justification. Rashi in Daf Beis and Biz, and talking about the Ita, the animal that kicks.
So he doesn't think that permanent hana is not hana.
Yeah, he doesn't think that lack of hana is sufficient, is necessary for. Because especially, what if the animal is kavan al hazik, ein hazik al matzoi, but it's nen, from what it does. So is that Shane or is that going to be Karen? Right. So the Rabbi Nachmanel seems to learn like Yoni that Ein Hanal Lehezeko is just for the contrastive point to shame. It's not a.
It's a categorization question.
Well, right. It's not a positive attribute of Karen. It's just a way of distinguishing Karen from shame. Rashi then got a comment about Beis and Beis. That's this Rashi over here, Bita. So Rashi says, Vahafi have a told of the Karen. Why? The Kavanasa Lehazik, Ki Karen. V'ein hana lehezeka ki kare. V'ein hezeko matzoi tadir. So Rashi here seems to imply that you need all three conditions to be satisfied. Kavanasa lehazik, ein hana lehezeka, and ein hezeko matzoi tadir. And when all three of those are satisfied, then you're dealing with bona fide karen. There seems to be another machlokas rishonim. Whether even the two categories of between kavana lahazik, the animal having intent to cause damage, and the requirement of it being ein hezeko matzui, some sort of like strange or peculiar activity, which of those two is really the relevant factor for karen? So Tosfos is not the Zion and Aleph here. Talking about the case of a chaya, so you own a lion or a snake or an animal that's mu'a mitfilasa, right? So you own a lion, so it's orche. It's not strange for a lion to attack. That's what lions do. But it's kavana lahazik. So it's kavana lahazik, but it's also orche. It's not a strange kind of activity for that animal. So does that fall under, does this nezek fall under Karen? Or does it fall under Rego? And Tosfos says explicitly that Kivan de Urche Bahati Avakimo Rego. So even though you satisfy kavan lahazik in the case of owning a lion or a tiger, because it's not a maisa mishuna, it's darko lahazik. It's darko, not just darko. It's
Orfe is not a kind of regular horse. Like Orfe is not the same thing as a mustang.
You don't think so?
No, Orfe is what is usual thing. Mustang is especially what's common.
Yeah.
Orfe is what's the usual behavior for the animal.
Yeah.
It could be usual for the animal to see something and do it, which is not common. It doesn't happen often.
Yeah, so he thinks that at least the fact that you have Orfe Bahaki overrides its categorization as caring.
Yeah. Our kind of thing is the categorization of regular. So,
yeah.
The regular category is much stronger. So it,
right. And the chain category would be in a Zeke Matsu.
It doesn't say anything about whether or not which more important thing Matsu is.
Yeah,
that's true.
But between, I'm assuming that Matsu is the equivalent of Urte Bahati between chain and regular. Or maybe I'm not right about that. Not even the Rambam disagrees about this case. The Rambam is very clear that in this case, it's considered keren. So in a case where you have, again, taking Yoni's correction, so in a case where you have kavana lahazik, but it's orche bahafi relative to the species of the animal, it's machloket Rambam and Tosos whether it falls under keren, in which case you'd be chayav rishus harabim, or whether it falls under rega, you're patur rishus harabim. So there's going to be machloksim about when it has characteristics of two different avos, which category will fall under.
What's the Rambam svara?
So I think the Rambam svara is that kavana lahazik is really controlling in the category of keren. Like that's really the determinant characteristic. Whereas Tosafot says, no, you could have kavana lahazik, but insofar as it's orche, it doesn't constitute. Doesn't cost too cash.
Where's that Rambam?
So let's look at the Rambam in Nisimam and Aleph Vav, and also Aleph Ches there. Because the Rambam introduces it in Aleph Vav, and the implication is that it's just part of the general discussion of Karen. So what are the. So that's for the. What's the real characteristic of Karen that's critical? So now, what are the toldos of keren that presumably exhibit the important characteristics of keren? So the Gemara gives us four examples: negifa, neshicha, revitza, ubehita. Right? And the Gemara here, I think what the Gemara's lashon is when it says this is. The Gemara really just emphasizes Maishna Karen, Kavanasa Lahazik, Aninami Kavanasa Lahazik. So when the Gemara emphasizes the critical factor, the Gemara says, oh, Kavana Lahazik is what's really important. That's his first Gemara over here. So you can see that's where the Rambam probably gets it from, that as long as you have Kavana Lahazik, that's really the controlling category. And all the other things are just contrastive with the other avos. So when the Gemara makes the move to say that Negifa, Tzvi'ita are all toldos of Karen, the Gemara says, listen, because Kavana Lahazik. But Tosos obviously has a different way of reading that one, because Tosos says you could have Kavana Lahazik combined with Orche, which makes it really just Rego. Okay. So now, what are the dinim of Shor in general, and to the extent that they reflect this presumptive Mechayiv grounded in Kavana Lahazik, Lav Orche, etc., etc.? So, I think the clearest indication about the Mechayiv factoring into the Dinin is Machlokes Amem Dalo Mebeis, whether a Shor Shehizik Shelo B'Kavana is Chayiv for Tashlumei Nezikin. So, like your ox accidentally gored somebody. Now, if you didn't have this Gemara, you would think, oh, it's right, the category of shor applies when your ox, you know, accidentally gores someone as well, right? Why should you distinguish? But it's actually not true. The Gemara says, "Izok in shelo b'kavana," in a case where your shor commits nezek without intent, or yudim chayav or shimin poter. It's actually a tachma chokas tanai. So you can understand that if you think the machayev really is kavana lahazik, like you need like malintent on the animal's side, then of course you're going to be putter for shor shehizik shalav kavana. Right, makes a lot of sense. Question is, how's Rabbi Yehuda going to interpret kavanasa lahazik? Right, a case where you know that the animal didn't have intent for nezek.
So what's your point there? That if you think it's kavanasa lahazik is the primary defining factor, there's more than the putter?
Yeah, of course, right?
No, you just be high of something else. You just wouldn't be high of shame. Why would you putter?
Well, shame is only if there's hana.
Okay.
And so it, let's say accidentally gores and accidentally gores and Rosh Hashanah.
Right, those only
yeah. Well, we'll see that in a second. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say that.
Yeah, we'll see that through the Rishios thing in a second. Yeah, so it's gonna be a question, right? What interpretation of so maybe he thinks that kavanaso lahazik is like a general characteristic of the category, but it doesn't have to obtain in each and every case that instantiates the category, right?
So,
yeah, but then he's disagreeing with like what the Gemara takes as almost a doctrinal analysis. The Gemara assumes that it's analysis not based on controversial. The impression you get from the first parak is that kavanah lahazik is the defining characteristic of parak.
Short parak.
What?
Short parak.
Yeah. So short, the category of short is comprised of karen, shane, and regal.
So, I agree, but your point is that the only one that is composite dependent was karen. Why do you define it?
Yeah, my impression is talking about a flat case of short and nagah.
Right. The only thing it could have been was Karen, so you should have been Kavanah Lahazik, right?
So I focus on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon here. Seems to be that when, so Rabbi Shimon would say clearly that the requirement of Kavanah Lahazik has to obtain in every case of Karen. Right? That doesn't mean that the Machayiv is Kavanah Lahazik. Rabbi Yehuda could just say that, no.
Wait, you go, I mean, I didn't tell. Why are you assuming this is only about Karen? Raising the mission thinks by itself, right? As common war, as a category of character, then it's just to Nazik in general.
It's not common war to come
out. No, Nazik in here is for. Yeah, I think
it's a common
war. Yeah, there's a lot of focus there. Everyone agrees. Tasha would come on, those who would come on, everyone agrees about these cases. Right. Also, it switches to Nazik.
No, that's over here. It's talking about Kofar or Skila.
Yeah, okay.
And then Nazik has Kashlume Nazik, right? Compensation.
Yeah.
Separate category. Right. And the fact that you're talking about Tamil also implies that it's talking about character.
Right, so.
No. The Zikin area is very clear from the ground. The Zikin is just meaning Kashlumin Zikin, not like a broad category. So I think Rabbi Yehuda would say that, again, the nature of the Av doesn't have to obtain in each and every case.
Meaning
okay.
It's not even Karen, it's just
Tamil. No, it is Karen. The reason why the category of Karen exists is because there's something distinct about an animal that intentionally harms. But then there are, that category can obtain even in cases where the animal does something similar without intent.
What's the advantage of calling it in the category of Karen?
Because it has all the dinim of Karen.
It has a
distinction of Tamim Muad. We wouldn't know how to begin to analyze it if you want to talk about a Machayiv. So you want to say that if it's Mazik, Shalom and Kavanah, and you go straight to Muad. Even though when it's Mazik and Kavanah, the distinction between that and Muad can't be. It has to fall under the category, I'm assuming it has to fall under the category of Karen. And the question is, the Machlokas about when does that category obtain? It's a very specific Machlokas then about the nature of the meaning of the category.
Do you try to see something like that?
So we'll have to look more closely at it when we get there.
We're going to spend $1.
Yeah, we just did 5 blood. That's like 3 weeks. At the 3 weeks, actually. We'll get there. Okay, does everybody see the? Everyone understand the discussion here in the Gemara? Why it's important? Okay. So the next. So that's the first thing. What happens in Shor Shehizik Shalav Kavanah? The second part of the discussion of the category of Karen, the characteristics of Karen, is less about the. Like the core case of how it's Nogeya and whether it has intent. But it's about the bearing of the question of which reshuts it happened in on the Mechayev of Karen. So where the Nezek occurs is critical in determining the kind of liability that and compensation that's due. Now, this is somewhat of a pitch, right? You might say, why should where it happens determine the liability? So we'll have to ask that. But then secondly, what, given that it does affect the liability, is that because of some sort of flaw in the mechayiv? Or is it because there's some sort of defense external to the mechayiv, which the mazik can offer? So let's look at the cases. So the Gemara Daf Pesim Beis, the Mishnah Daf Pesim Beis says explicitly that you're not chayiv for keren in the rishus that's miyucha to the mazik. So if Isaac's dog gores somebody in his house, or at least if it gores someone's, destroys someone's property in his own house, he can't be held liable.
Put that person down.
What?
Put that person down.
Rashi here quotes the Gemara. Why is that the case? That itself is kind of interesting, right? You're not liable when your ox is nogeach somebody in your own rishus. Why is that? So the Gemara says, and Rashi quotes it. Let's look at Rashi. It's nice, better. That's a quote from the Gemara in Gilam and Beis. It's like, what's your animal doing in my rishus? Yeah, so you could clear, like, what happens in a case where you give. There's a big deal about what happens in that case. Right? But still, the presumption is that you're generally pater. So how do you understand the defense here? Torah is just my bite. You think that bears on the mechayiv, or it's like an independent defense? No?
Yeah, I think that it's more fundamental in the nature of the nezesh, which is that you only are entitled to liability claims when your property has the permission to be used in the way that it is. And so when you have your property being used in someone else's rishut, you don't have, your property doesn't have the permission, isn't granted the same rights when it's in your own rishut, and therefore you no longer are entitled to compensation or anything else that's connected to liability, because your inherently in the way that property rights exist, you don't have the right to your property there.
Now you're saying I walk my dog into Isaac's rishus, I lose my property right in my dog.
Yeah.
Right. Saying insofar as there's no right to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you would concede the point in a case where you're invited for dinner, and or do you?
Yeah, I would concede.
You would concede in the case where you're invited for dinner, Isaac.
Because that's not like an independent justification for it.
Maybe they're right. Maybe there's nezek, but there's no like justification for tashlumin.
Sounds like you could say something about like the Ohio cattle, just like allowing your animal to like freely go around destroying things. Like,
right. And insofar as it's still in your rishus, then you haven't run afoul of like the primary machayev.
Right.
So you're saying that's related to the machayev then?
Yeah.
Right. You're saying that. So Noah's looking at it from the nizak side. The nizak doesn't have a right to compensation in this case. And Isaac's saying that the real issue here is that the shor never left its home. And like there has to be some sort of like action, or like some sort of, there can't be nezek when like the shor is like staying put. And the chiddush is that your whole property boundary is considered staying put. Right, that's what you would. So it's like you also have a chiddush that you want to say, oh, so it's like the shore didn't act or anything, and that has to do with like it's subsumed under its home territory. Yeah, those are two good ways of looking at that Gemara. Obviously, when we get to Yigimel, we'll have a clearer sense of what's going on here. But, yeah, Ben.
Maybe if you wanted to see more as a defense or something, in a way, it would be that, I'm not sure how this would be, but that if you had to always be worried about things in your house, damaging, you just never would invite anyone over. And
it's like an economic incentive.
Right.
Yeah, so you're saying there has to be some, it's like the Nasivus and the Bees case. Right? We have to allow people to enjoy their property, but if we have a liability rule that holds somebody liable when it's mazik or shoots them, then the people will be deterred from owning property in the first place. That's your... You know, I think that's not so dissimilar from Isaac's. I think it maybe gives... So I wouldn't view that as a defense, except if you're looking at it as like an external consideration. You might say, but that consideration factors into like the rule why, so long as it stays put on your property, that animal hasn't really acted.
Sure.
Right? Sure.
Not confident.
Well, right, sure. S-U-R-E, not Shin Vav Rei.
Sure.
Well, Noah, Ben's point? Well, you understand what Ben was saying?
Oh,
I'm sure.
What? No, not at all. His point? Yes, yes, repeat your point for Isaac.
So, I was just saying, something similar to what you were saying before, the defense that you shouldn't be hired because then you really never are able to have property in general because you're always responsible for whether or not someone comes into your property or outside and you just like stop owning things because no matter what you're outside, you would have invited people over because...
It would deter people from making efficient use of their property if they were held liable for...
That's what I was going to say. I don't know what job they would get up there. There would still be a fee of condition line to pay back. It still was
Karen,
just like he having independent justification.
Under Noah's pshat.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas like under both, I guess under both of your pshats, it's a question whether does chibud shemayim deter people from doing things. So if there's a chibud shemayim that you may have to do tshuva, then would that deter you from owning the property? You know. Well?
Some people like to do tshuva.
Right. So yeah, well, obviously we'll have to get better traction on this.
Honestly, right. Those are good ways of viewing what's going on here.
So it's not clear if this would touch on the machayiv or whether it's an external consideration.
There's another way that, like, it's the same, like part of the actual tariff. You could say there's no damage shmira on your property.
Yeah.
And the whole basis is damage shmira, so there's no damage shmira on your property.
Yeah, good. So that would be like a variation on the Isaac Ben idea.
Yeah.
But connecting it to machayiv of shmira here. Yeah. It's an interesting question whether you have a chiyuv shmir thing. Like you definitely have a chiyuv shmir within your own property to make sure that it doesn't leave your property. But saying within your property, is there some sense of a chiyuv shmir?
Yeah.
Right. Good.
But that would actually I was trying to take down the definition of in your just as parent, and you're only kind of taking down the application of any of the in your own just.
There's no shame in that.
But like everything is shmir, also all that stuff.
Yeah,
it's all mazikin. So like, if it's their own property, then like, it's never going to be shmir, also all that.
Right.
So it's not just the parents saying anything.
So we'll see the good. This is going to relate to. We'll see machlokas about bor. If you take a bor in your own rishos, is there going to be a basis for liability? Obviously, shein and regular, you're not chayv in your own rishos. You're patur even in rishos rabin. Bor is an interesting question. You know, you dig a bor and then someone trespasses. And they fall into it. Are you liable? Okay, so good. This is the part of Rishus bearing on the life.
I mean, I don't know how you construct the case, but is it like there's no case where Greg would be in your Rishus and it tries something else? Like the animals like jumping around in your property and like, break something that's like outside the property.
So that's gonna be complicated because Chor in that case you're not gonna be chayav. We'll see similar cases where it does something in Rishus Rabim that impacts something in someone else's Rishus Yachid. Presumably the same halacha would apply in an even a weaker way to when it does something that's in your own rishos. Like rishos hanizak is more protected than whatever protections exist in rishos harabim. Sorry, rishos hamazik is more protected than whatever protections exist in rishos harabim. Okay, so this is the bearing of... Amar, you want to say something for me, Brian? Okay.
As regards to the point about chiyuv yisrael shemayim and chiyuv yisrael shemayim, so the Gemara and Mem actually has this line where the question is whether you need to be take a mashma from someone if it's like a fee of the payback kofar because you might, like, since it's only a fee of the Yishamayim, so actually you might not pay it back.
So that depends on what people are motivated by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they indeed motivated by the fee of the Yishamayim?
Yeah,
I think we're going to have a separate, we're actually going to have one of our sugyas later in the year will be on the status of these fee of the Yishamayim obligations. Okay, that's the bearing of Rishus on Rishus Hamazin. What about the Rishus HaNizak? What happens if Karen occurs, not in Rishus HaRabim, where presumably most cases of Karen transpire, but if it transpires in the Rishus HaNizak, and there's just the injured party? So Liad, what's the din?
Karen is a malicious Tandiza.
Yep. I think this would have been distracting for people to try to make their way through the different things. If we don't know what to look for, it would be very distracting.
So what's it in?
So you should have gone with the safest answer. It's Machlokas. That's the safest
answer.
Yeah. So it's Machlokas here in the Gemara and Daf Taftal on the base. Karen Kama versus Mitzvah. At least the case of Karen, in the case of Tam. So obviously in the case of Mua, you would be hiding some shopping. Right, if you're Chayim Nezek Shalim Rosh Hashanah, of course you'd be Chayim Nezek Shalim in Rosh Hashanah. But what about a Tam? Tam is Chayim Chati Nezek in Rosh Hashanah. Machlokes, Rabbi Tarfon and the Chachamim, whether he's Chayim Nezek Shalim Rosh Hashanah. Chachamim say Rosh Hashanah does not bear on the liability, so you're only Chayim Chati Nezek. Rabbi Tarfon disagrees. He says you're Chayim Nezek Shalim, and he has Kal Chomer. He says, if your chayiv is a look, Shane and Regel are Kal versus Arabin, right? And then their chayiv is exacerbated in Rosh Hashanah. So he has like an argument to say that the same principle should apply to Karen and Tam. Just like we're Megil and Rosh Hashanah to do Nezek. Chatzi Nezek, that liability should be strengthened into Nezek Shalim versus Hanisa. So there's a few things that are interesting about this. You can see here. Umabu Bokum Shehikal, Shein Bal Regel, versus Rabbin Shev Chatzir, Hichmir Alein versus Hanisa, Vashana Nezek Shalim. Bokum Shehichmir Alein versus Rabbin Shev Chatzi Nezek, and then Shenachmir Alein versus Hanisa, Vashana Nezek Shalim. So it's interesting how we'll remember. One, so in terms of the outcome, it's machlokes whether Rosh Hashanah makes you more liable for Karen Tam. In terms of the derivation, how he gets there, it's interesting because he's appealing to some sort of analogy between the chiyuv of Shein, the bearing of Rosh Hashanah on Shein Beregel, for the bearing of Rosh Hashanah on Karen. So, for example, if you're interested in the relationship between the Avos and Zikin, this is an interesting case where Tarfon is arguing that the relevance of Rishuyos for Shein Beregel should apply to determining liability for Karen also. You might have said each job is different. Now, we don't know if Tarfon thinks Shor or Chol Mili to Shor, if he thinks like Rav is just one general category of Shor, or whether he thinks like Shmuel that they're broken up into different Avos. At least the Chachamim don't want to make the analogy to Shein and Beregel, but Tarfon wants to make the analogy. But so I really want to know what you think about why, I guess putting aside the Kal V'Chomer, why Rosh Hashanah Nizak should exacerbate the liability.
Just before that, should this depend on whether or not Chatzi Nizak, specifically what the financial paying for Tam is a Knas or not?
Why?
Because, especially the Lashon of Chmiru, could this just be that it's a Knas if you pay anything for Tam? So now, if you're going to be so negligent, or whatever it is, there's damage, or these are, we increase the knas. And this isn't actually a statement about that.
That's interesting. You might say that the whole reason for the knas is since you're not really liable, so you can only be partially liable.
Yeah.
So the spirit of the knas is to never go above Chatzi Nezek. You might just say that.
Okay.
And then, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to know how that would bear on this question. So what do you make of this? Rabbi, you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it might be.
How did I know? You didn't raise your hand.
You
half raised it?
Okay.
Do you like have comments that you've been like building up all the way through? So you were half raising your hand, so I didn't know that you were.
We just
kind of
on the phone the whole time.
We never saw it. Yeah. We want to know what you were doing in LA when we were on the phone.
That's true.
But like Jonah, there was like a 10-minute delay.
No, because I had to undo my stage show. But in terms of like, if we talk about the violation, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, right? Going along like definitely Isaac's Isaac's root, in the same way that like you didn't act when you remained in your property, you super acted when you go into Nisak's property. You hear Jonah's point, everyone? Isaac, you guys heard Jonah's point? This is a very good point, right? To the extent that you think that your rishus immunizes you from having committed any nezek, it's like your animal hasn't acted. The rishus hanizak really exacerbates that. Like, not only did you leave your rishus, you violated and trespassed into somebody else's. So you can understand. To the extent that you think the mechayiv of keren is sensitive to the role of rishus, it makes a lot of sense that it should be exacerbated. I guess that's a very point, John.
Okay. Say again.
What?
Trying to tell him that. Alright, so what I was arguing, it was basically the flip side of your argument, which is, I need to more flesh it out further, but he said, just like your property immunizes you to a certain extent from the damage that occurs in your property, then when you go out into someone else's property and damage there, then it's as if you're kind of violating their rights for when you preserve your rights when it's in your property, and when you go out to damage,
so think of it like in your property, you're protected because, like, you know, whatever, your animals hasn't done anything. And Rosh Hashanah makes someone neutral because both people have a right to be there. And Rosh Hashanah Nizak, it's like so egregious that your animal trespassed that that's a reason to, like, not only did it cause damage, it caused damage like on the other person's defensive turf. And that somehow strengthens the liability. Right, so that would be machlokes of Tarfon. Tarfon thinks that is the case, and the Chacham would just say, "What do you mean? Nezek is nezek, and we don't really care where it happens."
Part of the question also just like my original question, like the relationship between Elvis and broad consequences, and how like maybe it's very Tarfon. Maybe the Chacham just thinks that like Karen has like his DNA, you can never learn from one to the next. You can never Karen all these time was.
I mean, if you take it as a very narrow dispute about whether you could infer from Shane Borrega and all of those Karen, that was like a methodological observation I made before. I think if you table a methodological observation and look at this just in terms of the outcome, then it could be very interesting. It could be very interesting machlokas about the nature of Rishuyos and the Chayim of Karen.
Yeah,
but
even so, I'm saying,
yeah, possible. Again, it's possible. It's hard to know.
Not even the most egregious. It's more egregious when you do it.
But it's capped at Chatzin Ezek.
It's capped.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's what I thought Aliyah was saying, that to the extent that you think that the Mechayiv of Karen Tam is just Kansu Chachamim in order to motivate him to be Shomer his Shor, so then you'd say that you can never rise above the maximum Knas, right? Even it is more egregious for Shosan Ezek. I'm going to use that, but the nature of a knas is that it can't be mamon shalom. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Ben.
I guess also you could extend sort of what I was saying before, if you want to see that there's an external factor to it, is that when it's in the mazik's rishus, to make it the mazik chayev, when it's in the mazik's rishus, you'd be violating this sort of like, the mazik's supposed to feel comfortable in his own home with his own things.
Yeah.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, if you damage someone else's rishus, then they won't feel comfortable using their own property and their own.
Yeah, meaning on your view, extending your, it's like, so I think that's similar, right? That explains why it's more of an egregious violation. But the question, though, is then, I would push back and say, well, are these considerations internal to the Chayiv of Keren? Or are these like just general interpersonal, yes, like a person should enjoy greater protections on his property than on someone else's property, but that doesn't penetrate into the Chayiv of Keren. Those are just external considerations. And then we'd have to ask whether these external considerations could change the level of liability for Karen, right?
That kind of makes sense that it would be external because, as we said, once we've seen the Shane and Regal, we're kind of transferred over.
Yes, and it's like a general Mazikin imposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a methodological question about what the Shane and Regal thing is supposed to teach you. Yeah?
I mean, you could double down on, like, you need factors to make something Karen. And say when it's in Rishus Nizak, it's more a lot of okay, it's more of a kavana because he's like seeking out that other animal,
right,
going into its own territory.
Right. Right. You might say it's clear that there's greater and Like if it went into someone's if it broke through the fence into someone's private property, it was clearly more kavana darko lahazik than in a case where it just happened or just erupted.
But then you have to ask, like John was saying, like how much machine, but right, that's just sort of mitigate the idea of doubling down when you need to tie it all in.
Yeah. So. I think that's a very interesting point, because then you're saying that
maybe it's even Nana.
One second, before we get to Nana. We'll talk about the Nana case in a second. It's a very interesting point, because this is a very general issue in Ezekiel. To what extent do you think the definition of Nezek can be found and just the relationship between the Mazik and the Nizak? Like it's a relationship between the two parties and all information is contained right there? Or do you think that there are a lot of external factors that bear on the actual Nezek that's occurring? But this is like a general question in torts. It helps this question of when you think about Nezek, are you thinking about like one party A imposing harm on B, and there's like A causing harm to B, like this notion of like cause, a plaintiff and defendant, or do you think that no, Nezek occurs like in some sort of social environment, and there are all these external considerations that come to bear on determining whether or not there is Nezek, right? I'll give you some. I'll try to give some general examples later. But in this case, the point is: do you think that nezek is indifferent to like these external questions of reshuyos? Because nezek is about a shor hamazik and an adam or mamon hanizak. Or do you think that no, in evaluating what constitutes nezek, we have to factor in like where it happened, and where it happened determines like whether or not there is in fact this thing called damage. So like on, like for example, Isaac's point about the Rosh Hashanah Mazik, you might say, maybe there's no Shem Nezek. It's like that predicate doesn't apply in the Rosh Hashanah Mazik. Even though if you just looked at it in this narrow sense about the relationship between the plaintiff and defendant, there is clearly Nezek. But when you zoom out and look at the other factors that come to bear on the situation, it's not the case. Yeah. Is that clear to everyone?
So the argument that I suggested, which isn't really mine, is from the Chazon Yechezkel. The language that he uses is like ain din mazik or ain din nezek, which also seems to imply that there are general considerations that are beyond just a mazik nezek.
But he says ain din nezek what? Din.
When it comes to being mazik, when the nezek property is damaged,
you're
issued
on mazik. It's interesting. The Shiloh is going to be though then in that case. This is ain din mazik. Does he mean it in your sense that there's no basis for compensation? Yeah. Or does he mean it in Isaac's sense that like there is no imposition of harm? Right? That's the. So when he says din nezek, does he mean din tashlumin? Or does he mean like no din mazik? That's the question there. Yeah, Yoni, and then those.
Clarification. Are we sure whether that means like trespassing only cases of in the property of the Nizak or just being there?
I don't mean trespassing as in like an illegal entry. I mean trespassing as like being on his rishus.
Well, that even may be different then. Whether you're invited,
we'll see. We'll discuss that question. There is a lot of discussion about whether you have rishus.
You're sure we're invited to
the shore party.
Yeah,
was there for the barbecue. Yeah.
At least
was there for the steak barbecue. Good. That's the one issue, the Rashio's question. So we saw the Rashio's question and the Kavanah question so far. The third issue I want to talk about with Karen is the consideration of Kol HaMishana. This is a huge issue in Ezekiel. Again, it seems to bear also on this broader question that I about whether we look at cases of Ezekiel narrowly or more broadly. The Gemara Bava Kamma on Chavdal Amud Beis discusses this case. So it's a case where I incite someone's dog to bite you. This is the Shisavo Ezakele, Shisavo Nachash Pater. So that's the case. I incite a dog or a snake to bite somebody else. You would think that maybe the dog owner is liable, even though a third party incites. So it's, let's say, I incite Jonah's dog to bite Yoni. So Mar says, you would think that maybe Jonah is liable because he's the Baal Mamon. Mar says, that's not true. So Mar says, all parties are exempt. Even if you want to say that in that case I am liable for inciting Jonah's dog to bite Yoni, she say Yehuda Atzmo Pater. If Yoni does something to antagonize Jonah's dog, and then Jonah's dog bites Yoni, even in that case Jonah is exempt. Why? My Haima Kol Hamishame Ubo Acher Rishina Bo Pater. Idea that Yoni did something strange. Yoni did something untoward by antagonizing the dog. And now when the dog bit him, it can't be liable b'toras Karen. Why not?
Can you just go back with the for a second?
Yeah.
The second thing Rose said is that some of the Mishasa.
So even if you concede that, so even if you think that a mishasa is chayiv, thing, that's how I interpreted it.
But even so, if your mishasa invites you, the owner's
pater. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right that it means the bala keleb. Even if in that case the bala keleb is chayiv, shiseyu hu ba'atzmo pater. Yeah.
And then you get it to bite yourself.
Correct. So even if when I incite Jonah's dog to bite Yoni.
No,
you
incite Jonah.
No.
Same
thing? That's clear. Two different parties, yeah. The two chaveros referring to two different chaveros, yeah. Chaverum Kol Yisrael, that one's a chaver. She say, Uba ba'atzmo, if the nizak incites the dog, then he's pater, right? I'm a kol mishana v'achar v'shina v'al pater. So the question is, what is it? Like, why is this a pater? Let's look at the other case of the Gemara that's even clearer. So Gemara says, I have a proof, or Papa says, I have a proof for you, Rabbah, this principle of kol mishana is true. Shnei paros v'shis arabim, achas r'chutza v'achas mahalachas. So one cow is stopped, the other cow is walking. V'bo'atam mahalachas v'r'chutza pater. So the walking cow kicks the sitting cow. The walking cow is putter. Why? Rashi just explains, and this is obviously why the Gemara is appealing to it. Lo hayla lirbos b'shus arabi. B'chol mishane b'achar b'shina b'putter. The cow that stopped did something strange. It deviated from the rules of the road. So once it deviates from the rules of the road, it can't hold another cow liable for deviating from the rules. So how do we understand this? This is a special. It's not clear now in the Rishonim. Kosis explicitly says this doesn't apply to non-analogous cases. It's very analogous cases. I think the second case though is even stronger for our point. Because you might, in the first case, there's like some direct relationship between the Nisa, like the Nisa antagonized the Mazda. In the second case, there's no antagonist. So in the second case, shows you that it's not obviously a mere defense. It's not like, oh, you harmed yourself. I mean, you can still read that into the second case, right? Oh, the fact that you stopped on the highway means that you harmed yourself. Now that you can see, Rabbah doesn't like the proof, actually. That's Rabbah's response. I'm really Rabbah, I know, I need the chayam. Rabbah says, I would have helped you chayim in the case of the walking cow kicking the sitting cow. Now, he don't make use of the rishus of the zguya yalai. You have rishus to trample me, you don't have rishus to kick me. Right, so it's machlokas here. No, but it's very important. This machlokas here. What's the scope of kol hamishana v'achar v'shina bo? Right. I think Rav Papa's view is much more interesting because Rav Papa is saying that even if the shina doesn't justify the nezek that was caused, still it's a basis for a ptur. Now, there's a big machlokas whether this case applies to other mazik, whether you can invoke this kind of ptur. Other mamazik, one person does something strange, one person stops short, another person crashes into him or punches him, and you both have called Mishana. It's not clear if it would extend to Shane and Regel. So what do you make of this? What do you make of this issue in Karen? Do you think this touches on Mechayev? I think if you take Rava's view, it's much more plausible to say it's an external defense, right? Like somehow you brought the harm on yourself, right? If you take the Republic view, the implication is more that there is no basis for liability when a Nizak is Mishana. So how would you conceptualize that? Or even on our Papa's view, you would say that this is an external defense. Avram, you...
But Rava says it's Chayav.
Yeah, exactly right. Rava says that case is Chayav. Well, Rava says, look, had the walking cow merely trampled the stopped cow, then you'd be Chayav. You'd be Pater. Right? Because there's nothing about the shinui of the stopped cow that justifies the walking cow's kicking it. Her papa seems to be saying, no, the mere fact that, the very fact that you're Mishana, that the Nizak is Mishana, justifies a Mazik, like, imposing harm on it. Yeah.
So it's lacking in the particular Mishana of Karen, that once the Nizak is Mishana, the shinui of the Mazik relative to it is the
Yeah, it's very good, right? That's what I'm inclined to think also. That since like part of the Mechayev of Keren is Mishana, it's like you don't just look at like Mishana or Maisa Mishuna relative to norms, what are the general rules. You look at the Maisa Mishuna in relation to the two parties. So it's like given that we're living in a universe of people who are acting Bishinui, so the Shinui of the Mazik loses its force. Right, so we take like a wide scope analysis of what's we take a narrow analysis of shinui between the plaintiff and defendant who acted with shinui. And the answer is they both did. And relative to that framework, there's no basis for Mechayev of Karen.
What's up?
Is that what you're saying? Or you're
like,
saying
something? It is what I'm saying, but like just like taking a step back,
yeah.
It doesn't really make sense. Even if you want to say that those are expression of the particular Mechayev, the unique qualities of each other, the expression of the particular Mechayev, it doesn't really make sense to say that the law of is. Like, it makes sense to say that.
That's Maisa Mishuna?
Yeah, Maisa Mishuna, whatever, however you want to put it. Like, it makes sense to say that Kvanasso is, because the idea is that it's intentionally damaging, but it doesn't necessarily mean everything that's particular to that Adam is reflective of the Mechayev.
Right, that's true.
Like, why is it more damage or more of an issue or more of a problem or more discretion of damaging the more machine it is?
Because
doesn't make sense.
No, it does, because you can say what's wrong with the Maisa of Karen is that you broke from the norms of behavior. Right? Like you weren't supposed to be doing this kind
of
thing.
The reason it's the more machine it is, the more reason you think to resent it.
So it's not the more the more Mishuna the Mazik is, the more basis for liability there is.
No, I'm saying the exact opposite. The more Mishuna the Mazik is, the less a basis for liability.
Why? It's like the more you break from the rules of conduct.
It's also so unusual that it's not like something that could be expected by even Baal or by anybody. It's completely unexpected.
So
Karen is
Inohatsu.
So I'm saying, if anything, like
Karen is Inohatsu.
Right, it's supposed to be like a strange. Right.
Like,
that's what Leon said.
No, you're saying that the more normal, the more the basis for liability, right?
The more, yeah, exactly. So the more normal.
But he's saying the Mechayev of Karen, though, we know, is La Borche Bahafi.
No,
so by hypothesis, the category, the Av Malach.
I'm positing completely differently that there's every Av has a unique set of traits. Some of those unique set of traits are reasons why you'd be Mechayevit. For example, Kaladasa is more reason to be Mechayevit. Some of those definitions, even though you might not have been Mechayevit, still this qualifies as an ethic. So even though it's Mishuna, and it's not necessarily something you would expect societally, and there's no necessarily put societal expectation upon
right.
the owner, whoever to avoid, still the Chiddush of the Torah is Mechayev for it.
Right. So to be fair, you are only Chayev Chatzi Nezek because it's unexpected. But the question is within the rule of Chatzi Nezek for Maisa Mishuna. So you could say...
The real point I'm just making is just that even if you want to take the approach of, you can call it animistic, whatever it is, that the details of the Av are reflective of the Mechayev,
yeah.
It doesn't mean every detail of
Correct.
Every Av has to be
Right. What I'm trying to do here is really just to look at the clear exceptions to the
and
the factors that bear on the human. And then we'll try to get a, that should give us a better sense of the.
Yeah, I understand. It just doesn't seem intuitive, even if I get this far, for why you say being more of a human.
So you're walking back here to suggest?
No, I'm thinking what I'm saying. My point is that I understand the Sparta I articulated before, that like the relative machunaness of it should matter, but like, it's not intuitive at all.
Right.
I don't think it's intuitive that the more strange it is, the more...
Well, it's not the more strange, it's the more strange the behavior of the Nizak, the less basis for liability for the Mazak.
No, you're saying the more basis.
No.
That's
the opposite. Kol HaMishana Ubach. So it's, the point is that given a universe where...
Isn't that just because of the Mazik is then relatively less strange?
Yeah, that's my point. That's exactly my point.
So I'm saying if the Mazik is less strange, there's more reason intuitively to be Machai.
It's more of a reason to say it doesn't constitute Karen.
Because it's Karen.
Because by definition, Karen is La Borche Bahaki.
Also,
yeah.
Do we only see this story by Karen? It doesn't come up anywhere else?
So it's not clear. So the Gemara here has it for Karen. Yes, Tosus explicitly says it doesn't apply to Arab to Adam, that's my focus. And Carrie, I'd have to look more closely to see whether Rishon can apply it to Chamber Ego. My impression that the argument can be made that it's limited to to the extent that this principle is true, and my focus for Papa and Rava, how to conceptualize it, it's my focus whether it would apply to Chamber Ego. Okay? Good. Everyone with me? So I think these exceptions are really, really interesting. And trying to characterize what's going on in Karen. So, the next category that I wanted to talk about was shame. You think we should just stop here so Jonah can make mincha, and then we'll
pick up all these.
Well,
then we can all make mincha.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So, is everyone okay? Is everyone okay if we stop here and then we'll pick up the analysis? What? We were just talking about whether people are motivated by Chiyuv Bidei Shamayim. I guess we have our answer over here. So. They'll serve candy at Mincha,
Isaac. If you think that you should, it's better not to start at something at 10 minutes or 11.
Yeah. So why don't we stop here? Let's stop here and then we'll pick up.
Do you want to mention some Ha'aretz that were sent to you over break?
What?
Do you want to mention some Ha'aretz that were sent to you over break, maybe or something?
Jonah had a very good hour about we're talking about the Chiyuv Shmira, right? So Jonah pointed out the Mishnah later on said there's one day in Tanayim that there's no Shmira for Shor Muad El Asakin, right? So we're talking about the threshold for Anus. Like if you think the basis for liability is the fact that they have ownership, so you're saying, oh, why are you Anus when you lock it up? Usually Anus is like a much higher threshold to meet. So Jonah's pointing out that there is a clear day on the Tanayim that Ein Shmira Lemuad El Asakin, which implies that there are Tanayim who have a high standard for Anus, given that you know that the animal is liable. Yeah. Also, I think Noah made the point a while ago about maybe it's the predicate of Shmira doesn't apply to a person itself, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. We already saw an argument.
Yeah.
Adam Shmira's Gufo Alav. Right? So that's controversial.
Yeah.
So when we talk about Adam Orbi Olam, So next time what we'll do is we'll continue going through the specific features of the different of the avos. Then we'll wrap up with we'll talk about the Brisker Av and that very important machlokas about the Nezikin Hanyamadim Me'atzad Ashave. Part of that is a discussion of the relationship between the avos and toldos. That's all part of this discussion. And then we're going to move on. We're going to do one more topic. I'll tell you what that topic is later, and then we're going to do Adam Mor Liolam. Okay, and after we cover those three topics, this topic, the next topic, Adam Mor Liolam, we're going to continue in the Gemara. Okay,
that's the next topic. Controversial.
Well, no, it's not controversial. I'm just not sure if the next topic is going to be when one mazik is mazik al yedei a different mazik. So you have a eish al yedei shor. Maybe that's related to this discussion. I'm going to do Hezek Shein Onikah.
Wait.